From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of August, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, the governor of the state of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, will join us. I spoke to him actually last night on the Illinois State Fairgrounds about a contribution he and his wife have made to help put back together the Coliseum that's been closed for a while, and the steer he bought at the sale of Champions. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. September corn, 0.75 cents lower today at $3.61 and a half. December, $3.76, a half lower. The March down a 0.25 cents to $3.87 and 0.75. And May corn at $3.94 and a half, or rather 0.75 cents unchanged. July unchanged at $4.15. And next year's December corn at $4.03, a penny lower on the day. September soybeans down 10 3/4 cents at $8.57 and a half. November 8.69 down 10 3/4. January at 8.81, 10 3/4 lower. The March at 8.92 and a half down 9 1/2 cents. May down 8 1/2 at 9.04. And July at 9.13 and a half down 7 3/4. Next year's November beans 4 cents lower at $9.12 and a quarter cents. Bean oil futures 40 cents lower on the day. The bean meal settled down $6.30. September wheat futures for the soft red 9 1/2 lower at $5.32 and a quarter. July of next year at $5.78 and 3/4. And the soft red down 8 3/4. And the harvest month for the hard red at $5.95. That's the July, down 9 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August futures at 35 cents higher, $108.32 and a half. October at 109. Nine up 27 1/2. Feeder cattle at $149 and a nickel for 100 pounds, 12 1/2 cents higher. In September, up 47 1/2 cents at $149.15. Lean hog futures in the October contract $52.47 1/2, up 62 1/2. In December, at $49.45, 80 cents higher on the day. Of course, the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Listen to us online on demand anytime you'd like. The best way, right there at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.O-R-G. Of course, you can find us as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, and on the NPR One app. Here are some of the rest of the numbers as they're trading at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $65.07, $1.96 lower per barrel. Ethanol futures $1.35 and a half a gallon, down a penny and 4 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 3 6/10 of a cent lower at $2.09 and 2 cents. And gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price just under $2 at $1.99 and 9 cents. That's down 3 4/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $2.93 and 9 cents, down 2 cents even for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off around 300 points at 25,008. It's actually down 286. The U.S. dollar down 0.01 at 96.595. And the gold futures for the day at $1,177.10, down $15.90. The S&P 500 at 2807 even, down 34 points at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from meteorologist Andrew Pritchard for this evening. We'll have a chance of a shower or thunderstorm with a low of 68 degrees, south winds at 5 to 10. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a chance of a thunderstorm, and a high of 83, south winds at 5 to 10. That's for Agronomy Day right here on campus. Should be a pretty good day. We open our doors at 7 a.m. out on South 1st Street. Go south of the State Farm Center. That's the Assembly Hall. You'll see us on the east side of the road, and I hope you can make it there. Tomorrow evening, it'll be partly cloudy, says Andrew, and 67 with a west wind at 5 miles an hour. And for Friday, partly cloudy, a slight chance of a thunderstorm at a high of 84 degrees, a north wind at 5 miles an hour. Saturday, sunny skies and 83. Sunday, mostly sunny and 84. Monday, a chance of a shower and thunderstorm, mostly cloudy and a high near 80 degrees. And then Tuesday, sunny skies again and a high of a beautiful 78 degrees. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Jackie Vakes now joins us to take a look at what's happened in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Hey, so let's start with managed money today. Where do they stand?
Well, you know, that I wanted to include this. I included it last week, too, because I think it's really important for us to look at what they're looking at. And so this week, their long position in spring wheat increased from 48,000 to 50,000 contracts, and in soy meal from 43 to 47. Now, on the short side of things, if you remember back to last week, we went from being short 76 to short 43. Now we're short 54. So we've actually added 11,000 contracts at the managed level. On beans, we went to last week 67, this week 75,000 short. So you can see that the managed money is adding shorts to the corn and the beans since the report came out. And their net short on soy oil also increased from 93 to 96,000. And so, you know, their bias, it appears to me, is that and it would be not much different with anyone else, is just that, you know, this report gave us a situation that says it's more likely that they're going to want to be short rather than long, you know, and something's going to really have to prove to them that they want to go heavily into the long side on, you know, on the corn and the bean market.
Where do the support and resistance levels lay today?
Well, when you look at September corn, our first support, of course, is at 351, then 323, and then the major support would be at 305. Resistance up there at 365, and actually today we've traded just, you know, short of that. Next resistance, 374.25, and then, of course, we've got that major resistance at that gap that was left behind in June at 398 and a quarter to $4. December, first support, 365. 351.25, and then 337.25 for major support. Resistance, 380, then second resistance, 389, and of course, major resistance up at the gap left behind in June between 410 and 410.5. When it comes to beans, Todd, this is really quite the market, I'm telling you. How these support and resistance levels move around constantly. And, I mean, we're talking 30, 40 cents a lot of times. And so this week, first support is at 853 on September, 816.5, and then 722 for major. Resistance, 890, 912, and then major resistance up there at that 1006. So on November, we look at 860 for support. 826.25, which was that close to double bottom that we had put in, and then major support at 789. Resistance, 885, 922.5, and then 975. I could no longer justify putting major resistance at that 1065 like I had been. It's just, you know, I had to bring it down. I hate to have to do that, but this is reality for right now.
You know, we haven't had a chance to talk really since USDA released that big bearish report last week. What'd you think of those numbers?
Wow. I tell you, it was, you know, I expected the USDA was definitely going to move up. I did not necessarily expect that they were going to move up 4.4 bushels to 178.4 on corn compared to 174 in July. And, you know, we had 176.6. So that's going to be that would be a new record. And beans, 51.6 compared to 48.5 last month and 49.1. You know, and so what this says to me, Todd, is that, you know, this is the first month that we've actually seen them out in the fields and, you know, doing their counting and doing some of their, you know, you looked at their ear weight numbers and they were right up there with some of the major good production years that we've had on both corn and beans. And, you know, we took a ride this weekend, actually, and went up through Missouri and Iowa because I really questioned, is this real? I mean, in some respects, you know, because you're looking at 202 for an average in Iowa. And there are some pretty ugly places in Iowa, not huge amounts, but boy, where it's good, it is unbelievable.
You and I have both driven through that area, that Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Iowa area in the last couple of weeks, and it is just extraordinary.
And beans, I mean, beans that are just so green and tall and just, oh my gosh. I mean, it just kind of takes your breath away. It's so beautiful. And the places where it's bad, it definitely is bad. I mean, I saw some fields, you know, where they chopped the fields off and left the rows for the insurance companies. But I don't think the USDA is as far off as some people might think they are. Now, when you look at their supply-demand numbers, one of the things I thought that was interesting is, of course, carryout went up for 18-19, which you would have expected because we had higher production numbers. But they also increased feed usage. They increased exports for corn. And I thought their reasoning was interesting because they said due to lack of competition from Brazil for corn exports. And therefore, you know, the carryout did go up. We lost 20 cents on the midpoint and went to 360 on corn for next year, but not as bad as you might have thought. And you know, the market took it hard, but it hasn't totally fallen apart since then. When you look at beans, of course, production went up. And therefore supply went up, but they did increase crush by 15 million. They increased exports, which I thought was really something. And the carryout, I think, is what terrified the marketplace and caused us to lose that 35 cents on the average point, because that was 785 million bushel carryout for beans. I mean, that is huge. There's no question about that. But again, you know, they're statisticians is what they are, and they have to do what the statistics show them. And so wheat numbers, you know, basically we actually lowered the carryout on wheat, and wheat is the only crop in the U.S. that actually gained on its midpoint and went up to 510. When you look at the world, of course, we expected that the carryout stocks were going to go up at the world level on both corn and beans, and they actually went down on wheat. So the world really, you know, reflects just what's going on here in the U.S., and that's where the majority of the changes came as we went through this entire report. I think that, you know, the trade, everybody can say that the floor is trading 178 bushels, and yet look how they react. I mean, this is the thing that we have to be careful about when we listen to people talking, to make the assumption that even if it comes in at that, it's not going to have the impact that it does. But it certainly did have that on Friday. There's no question about it.
Let's wrap up our conversation by turning southward to Brazil. What are your assessments there today?
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to just share with everybody was the projections. You know, just like we do 10-year projections for acreage and production increases, they do the same thing down there. And so they're projecting that crop acreage in Brazil is going to go up 14.5% over the next 10 years, but production is going to grow 30%. And this comes out of the agribusiness production or projections from Brazil, and so that would cover 2017-18 through 2027-18. It was released by the Ag Policy Secretary of Brazil, and they worked with Embrapa also, you know, which is the Brazilian Agriculture Livestock Research Company. You know, the main takeaway from the study is basically that, you know, even though we're going to increase 14.5 acres in the next 10 years, crop production is going to go up 30%. And meat production is going to increase by 27%. And so most of this they expect to come because of improved productivity, you know, and they're going to do more things that they hadn't been doing. Now, the products that they primarily that they reviewed were coarse grains, wheat, oil seeds, and fruit. So don't, you know, this isn't all coming into just grains. And the majority of that acreage, Todd, is going to come from the clearing of the natural pastures. We've talked about it before. It's a cerrado vegetation. So in contrast to clearing forests, this is like a scrub brush that's around. And they're also going to convert some of those degraded pastures in that same area into row crops. So there could be the ones that are going to see the most significant increase, of course, are going to be soybeans, corn, and sugarcane as far as planting goes in those areas. But, you know, it's just a small picture of what's going on, okay, down in the south. Now, when you look at the freight situation, Todd, the National Association of Grain Exporters, they're estimating the higher freight rates are going to cost $2.4 billion extra for transporting grain, and that's going to add 20 to 40% and potentially 100% in isolated cases to the cost of transporting. So they're also, this is the key to me, estimates that the trading companies, in other words, you know, the ADMs and the Cargills and the Bungies and all those guys are going to see their margins reduced by about 20%. So, you know, this could make it a lot harder for them to expand, you know, like these projections show. But, you know, for right now, it keeps us in the competitive arena with Brazil. And that's one thing I'll wrap up with. One thing I really noticed, you know, I follow inspections closely. China mainland took beans from the Pacific Northwest this week for the first time that we've seen since these tariffs were put in place. So I think that this whole situation, like we talked last week, is playing itself out from the standpoint of China's buying from other people because we've seen big increases in Asian countries buying from us, so they're probably buying from them, but now they even came and took it from us in the Pacific. So I'm hopeful. Let's just put it that way.
Good news indeed for farmers in the Dakotas. Hey, thanks so much, and for the rest of the United States as well. We appreciate it, and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks, Todd.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. Last night, I stuck around at the Illinois State Fair for the sale of champions. The governor, Governor Rauner of the state of Illinois, bought the grand champion steer, $60,000. What a great event. Raised a lot of money for education and for those great young 4-H'ers across the state of Illinois.
No, that's right. That's what's so wonderful about the sale of champions. You know, we support our 4-H, we support FFA. We support all the hardworking, dedicated young men and women and our farm families across the state. So it was an honor for my wife and me to successfully bid on the grand champion steer again. And we're going to turn around and donate it to the U of I. So it's a win for the U of I, and it's a win for 4-H and FFA.
This fair is an important part of the agricultural legacy of the state of Illinois. What are your hopes for it in the future?
Yep. So I am a strong advocate for our agriculture in Illinois. It's the cornerstone of our prosperity. I'm a big advocate for farm families. My mom's family were all dairy farmers and corn farmers, so it's very personal for me. I'm so proud of the U of I. The U of I is one of the greatest agriculture schools in the world. It turns out some of our greatest agricultural leaders. And this fair is tremendously important. That's why my wife and I decided to support the restoration of the fairgrounds. We created a foundation, and my wife and I took some of the money out of our personal foundation I created years ago, and we're donating $1 million to fix up the Coliseum here so we can be a beautiful, proud place again, just like we did for the People's House, the Governor's Mansion.
And it'll be open hopefully in 2019.
That's exactly right. We want to get it open as fast as possible because there's a lot of opportunity there with that Coliseum.
Governor Rauner, thank you so much.
Great to be with you. And everybody come on out and enjoy this great fair.
The Illinois State Fair runs through Sunday. You can come here to the Springfield, the fairgrounds, about 276 beautiful acres and a whole lot to see. Again, I spoke with Governor Rauner not long after the sale of champions ended in Springfield last night. Tomorrow, we'll have more coverage of the Illinois State Fair on our home station. Nyla Boodoo will be there, the host of the 21st. That's Illinois Public Media's talk show that airs at 11 o'clock in the morning. So if you listen on our home station, be sure to tune in. Then you can also listen online. Look for the Listen Live button to AM 580 up at the top at the willag.org website. Well, yesterday at the Illinois State Fair, the sale of champions took place, and the CME Group is always heavily involved in that sale. Tim Andresian is here. He represents the CME Group. Thanks for being here. How important is it that the CME Group be involved in state fairs, whether it's here in Illinois or other states?
Look, we've been involved in agriculture for 170 years. So, you know, for a very, very long time, you know, people are producing animals, they're producing grains, they're producing whatever, and they're looking at our prices. So this is our DNA. This is what we've always been involved in. And we think it's really important to be involved in events like this, and in particularly given opportunities to help educate younger people. Agriculture is going to get more and more complex, and anything we can do to help educate the next crop of leaders, I think, is really important.
So I take it education for you is probably maybe two, maybe threefold. One of them is that they just know or learn that the CME Group is there, and they probably wonder what that is, and they may figure it out. And then, of course, it's about education, true education, at some point in their future.
Yeah, so if you think about it, and it's not just the ag community, right? It's all the other kids that come to the fair that walk through that go, oh, that's a nice cow or whatever they say. And those are city kids. And so the first level of that and our commodity carnival game is to help people understand some of the challenges of commercial farming. You just don't put the corn in and make money every year. You just don't grow animals every year and make money. There's a risk involved in this. And we think it's important that people understand that. They understand the entrepreneurial spirit of the agricultural producer. And so we want to be here. We want to help people understand that risk. And then secondarily, as they move along, and in particular for the kids that are here that are going to go and, run cattle operations and run farms, we want them to understand you can manage that risk. And that's where we help them.
Yeah, so you help them in a couple of ways. Scholarships is one of them. The University of Illinois thanks you very much, and all the rest of the universities in the state and any of those places that they might be headed to. And the other is, you mentioned the Commodity Carnival game, so there is an education side the CME group is using to put forth as well.
Yeah, we have a fairly wide-ranging education program. So if you think about Commodity Carnival, a game, which this is the sixth year we've done this, this year we're at 100 fairs in 8 different states. And it's a game where kids 7 to 14 start to understand what it takes to grow an animal and then to market that animal. What are the input costs? What you got a cost for that animal? And then what is the market price? And do I make money or lose money? But we have a really wide range of education. If you look at older kids, so clearly we're giving scholarships for kids here going to college, but we have a commodity trading challenge as well. So schools from all over the world are trading, paper trading, to understand how the markets work. We also spend a lot of time doing education in conjunction with other organizations. So in the last couple months, we have jointly worked with US SEC, US Soybean Export Council, to provide training to end users in Asia, in places like Vietnam, Cambodia, about how to use US soybeans and how to hedge US soybeans. So we have a very wide-ranging focus on education.
And on the flip side of that, the farmer, the producer, on the front end of the chain can also come to you for educational opportunities at the CME Group online.
Absolutely. So one of the big things we have is futuresfundamentals.com. It's futuresfundamentals.org. It's a great source if you just want to go and start to understand how the futures markets work, how hedging works, and that sort of thing. The other thing I would tell you, though, and this is really important, if you're a producer and you're saying, wow, I need to get smarter about marketing, the biggest piece of advice I can give you is get a good marketing advisor or broker to work with. Somebody that you can go do that studying, but then they can sit down with you, look at your farming operation, help you understand the right strategies for you, and then help you execute those strategies.
On that note, I thank you very much. Those folks can come to WILLAG.org. They'll find all the list of the brokers that work with us here on the radio station. Any of them would be glad to help you out. Thank you so much to Tim. We appreciate all the work you do at the CME Group and the work here at the Illinois State Fair.
Thank you very much.
That's Tim Andreessen of the CME Group in Chicago. I spoke with him last night just prior to the sale of champions at the Illinois State Fair. The fair is open in Springfield through this coming Sunday. In just a couple minutes, I'll come back. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Remember, you can hear all of our programming in most of its entirety up on the website at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. Listen to us as a podcast as well, any place you'd like, including the Google Play Store, iTunes, Stitcher, and the NPR One app.
It's National Lemon Meringue Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Ellis Fries was born. A Swedish botanist, he developed the first system for classifying fungi. In 1796, John Torrey was born. An American botanist, Torrey did extensive studies of North American flora. He was the first professional botanist in the New World. In 1835, C.H. Farham was issued a patent for a hand-cranked rotary washing machine. In 1911, Crisco was introduced by Procter & Gamble. Crisco is a hydrogenated shortening made from vegetable oil. The new process produces shortening that stays in solid form year-round, regardless of temperature. The first advertising campaign trumpeted the all-vegetable shortening as a healthier alternative to cooking with animal fats and more economical than butter. And in 1914, the Panama Canal was officially opened when a ship sailed from the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean. The canal crosses a small mountain range with a series of huge locks. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks so much. Let's start in Canada, Saskatchewan, some of the prairie regions of that nation, where I believe not only have they been suffering from drought, but they've had some really high temperatures recently.
Oh, absolutely. Over this past weekend, the southern one-third of the Canadian prairies got widespread 100 to 104 degree high temperatures, and there was one report of 107. This is pretty hot for anybody, but let alone in Canada. So the situation occurred in the area that has been drought-stricken most of the past year and really added a lot of insult to the injury there. And I think the bottom line is that we've further damaged a lot of those late-season crops, including corn and soybeans in southern Manitoba and eastern parts of Saskatchewan, as well as the late canola crop. Already there was a lot of damage done prior to this, but this really pushed them over the edge, and I think we've got some bigger problems there now. The weather is going to get a little bit cooler as we go forward in time, but still warmer than normal, and we are not seeing a lot of rain potential.
One of the other regions that's been suffering seriously dry weather across the planet includes Western Europe, places like France, Germany, and the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were really quite dry back in July, and conditions got a lot worse as we came into the first part of August. A steady diet of 80 and lower 90 degree temperatures, which, again, like Canada, is pretty unusual for that far north. And there was a little frontal boundary that moved through this past weekend and brought some scattered showers, and we've actually improved topsoil moisture a little bit in the UK as well as portions of northern France and northern Germany. But there's still a lot of real estate there that's still dry, and it looks like there's one more frontal system that's going to push through here starting tomorrow and going into Saturday that will generate some light rainfall. But this rain is only going to be a tease for the region. They're going to need much larger quantities of rain to move across that area before they are out of the woods. But in Europe, because they're so far to the north, having cloudiness and some showers around can instantly bring the temperatures down to a more normal level, and I think we will see that. So relief is occurring there, but they got a ways to go.
Speaking of cooler temperatures, it's not been too bad here in Illinois. And according to USDA, we are now the Garden State. I think I'm going to take that away from New Jersey. I'm wondering what we look like in the coming week or so.
Yeah, you know, we are in a very active weather pattern right now, and we are bringing some cooler air southward from Canada. And we are going to see our temperatures bounce around a bit, mostly normal and slightly below normal as we go forward through the coming week. And there's going to be a daily occurrence of showers and thunderstorms impacting most of the key production areas. Now, not everybody is going to see that rain every day, but over the 7-day period coming up, ending, say, next week at this time, time, most of the region will have seen a healthy amount of rain, with some of those totals possibly getting upwards to the 1 to 2 inch range in a number of locations from Iowa and Nebraska right on over to Ohio, maybe even southern Michigan, and southward into the lower parts of the Mississippi River Basin and Tennessee River Basin area. So a pretty nice period of rainfall, and with temperatures staying in a relatively normal range of upper 70 and 80 degree readings, I think we're going to see a lot of these crops respond real well. Certainly it's a little late for the corn, but soybeans will certainly benefit greatly from this environment.
Hey, thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.